This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. The Vatican has said the health of retired Pope Benedict has worsened due to his age. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
Vatican officials have said doctors are monitoring the condition of the 95-year-old retired pontiff. Pope Francis had gone to visit his predecessor before the announcement and asked the faithful to pray for him. Benedict has lived in a monastery on Vatican grounds since he retired in February 2013. Benedict was the first pontiff to resign in 600 years. I'm Karen Chamas.
The U.S. is going to require coronavirus testing for all travelers from China, the AP's Ed Donahue reports.
China has been rolling back its strict antivirus controls and recently announced it will resume issuing passports for tourism for the first time since the start of the pandemic. There's also been a surge in cases in China. The CDC announcement is starting next week. All travelers to the U.S. from China will be required to take a virus test no more than 2 days before travel and provide a negative test before boarding their flight. This applies to anyone 2 years and older, including U.S. citizens. The CDC says the restrictions will be in place because of a surge in cases, as well as a lack of adequate and transparent information about the virus from China. I'm Ed Donahue.
Kosovo Serbs, who have been blocking roads in northern Kosovo for 19 days, have agreed to start removing barricades from Thursday morning, bowing to calls by the United States and European Union to defuse tensions. Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić, who met with Serbs from northern Kosovo, said the process of removing barricades will begin Thursday morning. He also added the U.S. and EU have guaranteed that none of the Serbs who set up barricades will be prosecuted. This is VOA News. Ethiopian Airlines' first commercial flight to Tigray region in nearly 2 years has landed in the capital, Mekele, with emotional reunions shown on TV between relatives cut off by the war. Mohammed Yusuf reports from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi.
The first of many Ethiopian Airlines flights arrived in Mekele, signaling an end to the two-year isolation of the region from the rest of the country. Families on the flight were seen embracing one another after arriving in the city. Ethiopian Airlines said Tuesday the daily flights will help families reconnect, as well as boost business and tourism. The end of the isolation comes weeks after the Tigray People's Liberation Front rebel group and the Ethiopian government signed a peace deal in South Africa, agreeing to resolve their differences through dialogue and end the suffering of the population. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Rwanda said a fighter jet from the Democratic Republic of Congo violated its airspace Wednesday amid spiraling tensions between the neighbors over rebels advancing in the DRC's volatile east. The DRC has accused Rwanda of backing the M23 rebel group, which has captured swaths of territory from the Congolese army and allied militias in recent months. Kigali has denied the allegations, which are also supported by UN experts as well as the United States, France, and Belgium. Police and U.S. National Guard members were going door-to-door on Wednesday to check on residents of some of Western New York State's neighborhoods following a deadly Christmas blizzard. Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener reports.
Plows were out clearing streets in Buffalo, New York, after a once-in-a-lifetime storm dropped more than 4 feet of snow to the area over the Christmas weekend.
Maybe the worst storm in recorded history since these storms have been tracked. Buffalo, again, was ground zero.
Buffalo Mayor Byron Brown told reporters he was hoping to soon end a driving ban meant to keep motorists off dangerous roads and reopen the city to car traffic on Thursday.
Bolivian police on Wednesday arrested Luis Fernando Camacho, governor of the economic powerhouse Santa Cruz region, on so-called terrorism charges, setting off street clashes between his supporters and security forces. Camacho, a former right-wing presidential candidate, was under investigation on several charges, included for alleged role in the resignation of leftist President Evo Morales in 2019 and for allegedly fanning protests in Santa Cruz this year. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Thank you. Today is Thursday, December 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, China's surge in COVID cases prompts the U.S. to require negative tests from all travelers coming from that country.
The U.S. move to require COVID-19 tests for travelers from China follows similar actions taken by India, Italy, Japan, and Taiwan.
A former pontiff is very ill, and Pope Francis is asking for prayers from the faithful.
Una preghiera speciale.
I would like to ask all of you for a special prayer for Pope Emeritus Benedict, who in silence is sustaining the Church.
And Vladimir Putin says Russia will retaliate against a price cap on its oil. We'll have these stories and more next. Federal health officials have announced that because of the surge of coronavirus cases in China, nearly all air passengers from the country will have to provide proof of a negative COVID-19 test to enter the United States starting on January 5th. The only exceptions will be children under the age of 2. Details from VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
The U.S. move to require COVID-19 tests for travelers from China follows similar actions taken by India, Italy, Japan, and Taiwan. The restrictions being imposed by the United States will apply to those traveling from mainland China, Hong Kong, and Macau, including those transiting to other destinations. Because of China's lack of adequate and transparent data, the United States is taking proactive steps to protect Americans' public health and to be on alert for potential COVID-19 variants emerging, a federal health official told reporters on a conference call Wednesday. The official, who briefed on condition of not being identified, explained that the lack of Chinese data about variants, testing, and new cases makes it harder for U.S. public health officials to identify new variants spreading to this country. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
The U.S. move comes just hours after China said it would resume issuing passports and visas for tourism, in another big step away from antivirus controls that isolated the country for nearly 3 years. Associated Press correspondent Karen Thomas has that story.
The move could set up the stage for a flood of Chinese people going abroad for next month's Lunar New Year. The holiday that starts on January the 22nd is the country's busiest travel season. But it also presents a danger they might spread COVID-19 outside of China as infections surge at home. China stopped issuing visas to foreigners and passports to its own people at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic in early 2020. The announcement adds to abrupt changes by the Chinese government, who are rolling back some of the world's strictest antivirus controls. The easing of restrictions comes as China tries to reverse an economic slump. I'm Karen Chamas.
Russian President Vladimir Putin says Russia will retaliate against a price cap on its oil imposed by Western countries. Reuters correspondent Francis McGuire has the details.
Russia says it will ban oil sales to states that stick to a price cap imposed by Western countries. The retaliatory measure was decreed by Russian President Vladimir Putin on Tuesday. It was presented as a direct response to what Moscow called actions that were unfriendly and contradictory to international law. The Kremlin ban would stop crude oil sales to countries taking part in the price cap from February 1st to July 1st, 2023. A separate ban on refined oil products like gasoline and diesel would also take effect on a date to be set by the government. The Kremlin said Wednesday it did not consult with the OPEC Plus group of leading global oil producers on the issue. The price cap on Russian oil was imposed earlier this month and aims to cripple Moscow's military efforts in Ukraine. It means oil traders who want to keep access to Western financing must promise not to pay above $60 per barrel for Russian seaborne oil. That is far below the prices at which Russia could sell oil for much of the past year. Russia is the world's second largest oil exporter after Saudi Arabia. Oil prices fell on Wednesday as investors grew more worried over how the health crisis in China could hurt the country's economic recovery. Chinese hospitals have been under intense pressure as the country changes its approach to the global health crisis.
That's Reuters correspondent Francis McGuire reporting. The Kremlin on Wednesday dismissed Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's 10-point peace plan, saying that proposals to end the conflict in Ukraine must take into account what it calls today's realities of four Ukrainian regions having joined Russia. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv describes Ukraine's reaction to Russia's statement about its peace proposals with VOA's Steve Karish.
According to Ukrainian officials, Ukraine is not ready to sacrifice its territory and its country in order to, you know, in order for fake peace, as Ukrainian officials put it. So for Ukraine, it's very important that all the territorial, so the territorial integrity, which is under all the conventions, is in place. And basically, this is probably the main point for the negotiations, is Ukrainian territory.
Why do they call it a fake peace?
Well, fake peace because Ukrainians understand, and both officials and also the society, that Russian Federation would definitely try to go to come back with war if this war, current war, is not finalized. So Ukrainians understand that if, for instance, Ukraine sacrificed territories or Ukraine sacrificed its people, which is basically comes together because it's not only territories that Russia is trying to annex and annexing since 2014, but also people. So for Ukraine, it's clear that if this remains like this, the peace is fake, that Russia would come back with war again and will try to get more and more until Ukraine is not existing anymore. And this is basically the main of, and this is the official position, and this is the social, you know, position as well, because without these questions to put in order a real peace and real long-term peace, this is very important that Ukraine wants long-term peace, it would not be possible.
I think everybody understands the Ukrainian position, right? This was our land. You came in. You are attempting to conquer and annex these lands. But war is hard. War is long. War is deadly. Is there an appetite amongst either the Ukrainian citizens or officials, to use your word, to sacrifice some of that land to get a lasting peace, if it were a lasting peace?
Well, the problem is that Ukrainians and Ukrainian officials as well do not see lasting peace if territories are sacrificed. I mean, we should, I guess, look deeper into Ukrainian history, because Ukraine went through a lot of wars in the past. And actually, it's not the first war with Russian state, because if we look back, Ukraine was always fighting for its independence for many years. And basically, and Ukrainians want to end this war as soon as possible. And I think that Ukrainians want it more than anyone else, because Ukrainian people are dying every day.
That's Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. She was speaking with my colleague Steve Karish. Pope Francis says former Pope Benedict, who is 95 years old, is very sick. Reuters correspondent Edward Barron reports Francis has asked people around the world to pray for Benedict.
95-year-old former Pope Benedict, who in 2013 became the first pontiff in 600 years to step down, is very sick. That's according to his successor, Pope Francis, who asked the church to pray for him on Wednesday.
Una preghiera speciale.
I would like to ask all of you for a special prayer for Pope Emeritus Benedict, who in silence is sustaining the church. Let us remember him. He is very sick, asking the Lord to console and sustain him in this witness of love for the church until the end.
The Vatican later said in a statement Benedict had suffered a sudden, quote, worsening of his health in the previous hours. It also said his condition was under control and that he was receiving constant medical attention. Francis, who visited the former pontiff shortly after his general audience, has often praised Benedict, likening him to a grandfather. But the presence of two men dressed in white at the Vatican has at times been troublesome. Conservatives have looked to the former pope as their standard-bearer. Until a few weeks ago, those who'd seen Benedict said his body was very frail, but his mind was still sharp.
That's reporter Ed Barron with Reuters. Ethiopian Airlines' first commercial flight to Tigray region in nearly 2 years has landed in the capital, Mekelle, with emotional reunions showing on Tigray TV between relatives cut off by the war. Mohamed Yusuf reports from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi.
The first of many Ethiopian Airlines flights arrived in Mekelle, Tigray's regional capital, Wednesday, signaling an end to the two-year isolation of the region from the rest of the country. Families on the flight were seen embracing one another after arriving in the city. Ethiopian Airlines said Tuesday the daily flights will help families reconnect, as well as boost business and tourism. The end of the isolation comes weeks after the Tigray People's Liberation Front rebel group and the Ethiopian government signed a peace deal in South Africa, agreeing to resolve their differences through dialogue and end the suffering of the population. The peace agreement has helped to open up the region, allowing aid to reach millions of people and restoring telecommunications and banking services. On Monday, Ethiopia Telecom representatives joined a delegation led by the parliament speaker to assess the war-damaged telecommunications infrastructure. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's spokesperson, Beline Seyoum, tweeted on Wednesday that Ethiopia Telecom had completed the connection of 27 towns and 981-kilometer fiber optic cables were repaired. The national airline said it will increase the number of daily flights depending on demand. Kenyan and African Union delegations are expected to visit Mekelle this week to oversee the implementation of the November peace agreement. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Next up on Issues in the News, please join VOA executive producer Steve Reddish as he moderates a panel of journalists to discuss the top stories of the final week of 2022 and preview 2023. They discuss results from the lame duck session of Congress and challenges facing Republicans who take control of the lower chamber in early January 2023. That's Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
You're listening to VOA News. The French news agency AFP says a special criminal court to judge war crimes and crimes against humanity in the Central Africa Republic has had its term renewed for 5 years. The UN-backed tribunal was set up in 2015 to try crimes dating back to 2003 when General François Bozizé staged a coup. He was toppled 10 years later as the country spiraled into civil war. A draft bill to extend the term of court by 5 years was put forward by the Ministry of Justice and approved in a voice vote at the National Assembly. AFP says in late October, the tribunal issued a life sentence and 2 20-year terms against 3 members of the 3R group, which was accused of killing 46 villagers in a massacre in 2019. Justice Minister Arnaud de Joubert-Ebazini has warned those who he says plot against state institutions and atrocities against citizens. He says they should know that justice will catch up with them. The UN has condemned a recent move by the Taliban to ban women from attending universities and working for humanitarian aid groups. Reuters spoke to one female lecturer who said she was devastated. Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley-Watson has more.
The world must not abandon the women of Afghanistan, this university lecturer says. After the Taliban-led administration last week banned women from attending universities and working for humanitarian aid groups. Bakshi, who wished only to be identified by her surname for security reasons, has qualifications in political science and law and used to teach at 2 private universities. She says there is now no place for women in Afghan society.
I'm so upset that according to the Taliban's new decree, no women can continue their duties and activities as part of the society. And this situation, that women have no place in Afghan society, is so disappointing.
The Taliban's bans on women have sparked international condemnation, with the UN calling for the full, equal and meaningful participation of women and girls in Afghanistan. There have also been protests inside the country. The day after the ban was announced, dozens of women marched in Kabul University. They chanted, "Education is our right. Universities should be opened." Elsewhere, in the western city of Herat, videos showed the Taliban firing a water cannon at protesters. The ban on women attending university is just the latest blow to female rights in the country, with girls already excluded from attending secondary schools. Bakshi says she is concerned about the future of Afghan women under the Taliban, and she wants the international community to do more to support their plight.
I urge the international community not to abandon and forget Afghan women. Afghan women must not be sanctioned anymore. They must not be sentenced to imprisonment. When you talk about human rights, then please support them and do not abandon them.
Four major aid groups, including Save the Children and Care International, have suspended their operations in the country. They say they are not able to run their programs, which reach millions of Afghans, without female staff. It comes as the UN warns two-thirds of the population need aid to survive, and 20 million people face acute hunger.
That is Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson. In other news around the world, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has presented new plans to beef up his military power next year at a meeting of the communist country's political officials. Kim's comments, which were reported by state media, indicate he will keep up his provocative weapons testing after a record string of missile launches this year. Some observers say the new goals that were not disclosed publicly could be related to Kim's push to expand his nuclear arsenal, as well as acquire high-tech weapon systems, including multi-warhead missiles, advanced drones, and possibly a spy satellite. Violence linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State group, which much of West Africa's inland Sahel region has experienced for more than 7 years now, is spreading to the region's coastal states. Benin is the hardest hit, according to the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project. The group says attacks have jumped more than tenfold between July and December compared to that same period last year, from 2 to 25. Analysts say if the violence escalates and spreads beyond the Sahel, it could have far-reaching geopolitical consequences. Philippine officials say the death toll from heavy rains and floods over the Christmas weekend has risen to 25. 26 other people are still missing. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Millions of Africans depend on fish for their main meal, but the price of ice, nets, and other basic commodities that West African fishermen need to do their work has skyrocketed in recent weeks. Soaring fuel prices caused by the Russia-Ukraine war and other factors have hit fishermen and working-class communities hard. The World Food Program says food insecurity exists in at least 8 West and Central African countries and is expected to worsen in 2023. Some 48 million people are expected to face hunger there in the next year, according to the United Nations. Ndiaga Gwe is the Regional Senior Fisheries Officer for the Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, and acting FAO Country Representative in Ghana. Gwe tells me that the price of ice alone, which fishermen on a multi-day journey need to store their catch, has soared in 1 week.
If we take the cost of ice as an example, this will have an impact on the conservation of the products. Just a lot of post-harvest losses. It is the same with the cost of the other production tools like fishing gears, nets, and others. It really has an impact on the cost of production. And of course, if the price of the nets and other tools like engines and oils are high, it will impact the renewal of the equipment that is largely depreciated. Because fishermen, they need to renew their equipment. But because of the high prices now, the inflation rate is so high that they are facing serious problems.
How many countries and how many people rely on fish for their, you know, main source of food for a meal?
And in West Africa, one can say that maybe more than 10 million people are directly or indirectly involved in the fishing sector. To be more precise, I can say that, for instance, if you take a country like Senegal or Sierra Leone, fish is a staple food. In Senegal, maybe 75% of animal protein intakes come from the fish and fishery products. So it is a serious concern in many of these West African countries, not only those who have coastal zone, but even in the inland fish and fishery products are extremely important, and they are facing the same problem than those communities living near the seashore.
That is Ndiaga Gwe. He's Regional Senior Fisheries Officer for the Food and Agriculture Organization and Acting FAO Country Representative in Ghana. He was speaking to me from Dakar, Senegal. To all our VOA listeners, you now find International Edition back on our general website, voanews.com. There you'll find other VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voanews.com, and thanks for listening. This has been VOA's International Edition. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our websites for an in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com and voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Those who lived under the ISIS caliphate were subjected to heinous crimes, including killing, forced labor, rape, and sex trafficking. Even now, ISIS remains a critical threat in Iraq and globally, declared Ambassador Richard Mills, Deputy U.S. Representative to the United Nations.
We have seen the terrorist group continue to use violence in Syria and Iraq and seek to refill its ranks by trying to break out captive ISIS fighters from detention centers and prisons.
These crimes must not go unpunished. The UN Accountability to Promote Accountability for Crimes Committed by Daesh, ISIL, or UNITAD is doing its part to help deliver accountability for the barbarous crimes committed by ISIS. UNITAD continues to collect, store, and preserve evidence of ISIS crimes. This effort is laying a foundation for future prosecutions based on comprehensive evidence, including battlefield evidence. Ambassador Mills welcomed the cooperation between UNITAD and Iraqi courts and other national authorities, requesting information from it for investigations and prosecutions.
UNITAD's work can assist in the completion of transparent prosecutions against ISIS members that will meet minimum fair trial guarantees and legal protections. We encourage the government of Iraq to adopt legislation on international crimes, notably genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity.
The continued presence of thousands of ISIS fighters in detention centers and their associated family members in displacement camps in Syria and Iraq must be addressed, said Ambassador Mills.
These facilities are targets for attack by ISIS and for additional radicalization to violence, underscoring the urgency for all states to repatriate and prosecute those who have committed crimes as appropriate. We commend Iraq and other nations for repatriating their nationals from these camps, and we urge the Iraqi government to restart such repatriations.
The United States welcomes UNITAD's commitment to supporting domestic legal proceedings by states that have repatriated individuals who traveled to Iraq and Syria to join ISIS and engage in terrorist activity. Ambassador Mills urged all states whose nationals committed crimes as foreign fighters to take advantage of the valuable assistance UNITAD can provide in investigating and prosecuting these individuals. The United States is proud to assist UNITAD and looks forward to UNITAD's continued progress in helping deliver accountability for ISIS's depraved crimes and a measure of justice for its victims.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.